Welcome to another coming into the weekend edition of Dynamic Duo. I'm Kevin Derrick. I'm on here every Monday and Friday, while co-host Jim Fetzer takes over on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Well, today we're talking once again with a cutting-edge thinker, somebody who thinks way outside the box. I always like people like that. And in particular, I'm really looking forward to today's conversation because of all of the sort of tangential paths I've followed, leading from, you know, starting at 9/11 and moving off into some related area. Probably the most interesting one is the one that led me to the book Political Ponerology by a guy named Lobosiewski. This book argues that psychopaths, and we know about psychopaths from various psychological studies. These are people with no conscience, no empathy, and often a very, very egotistical orientation. These people, according to Lobosiewski, tend to rise up hierarchies of power, and occasionally they infect an entire body politic. This may explain something about what's been happening here in the USA of late, and the editor of Lobosiewski's Political Ponerology, Laura Knight Yadchik, thinks that is exactly what is happening here in Bush's USA. So I did a little background research. I discovered that Laura is the author of, I believe, 8 books, including The Secret History of the World and 9/11, The Ultimate Truth. She thinks outside the box on a whole lot of various topics. So I guess it's my pleasure to welcome to Dynamic Duo Laura Knight Yadchik. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me.
Well, hey, it's an honor. I'm very impressed with your work on ponerology. Maybe you could start out by explaining to the listening audience just what exactly is ponerology.
Ponerology is the word is an archaic term for the study of evil. It was a theological term, and Lobachevsky rehabilitated it for scientific use because we really don't have a scientific term for the study of evil, and we really need a scientific term for it because evil is a very important thing to study, and not necessarily in a spiritual sense, because there are scientific explanations for the existence and spread of evil in society.
Well, that's a great capsule summary, and the book Political Ponerology has generated a lot of discussion, and you know, my essay, which borrowed some of its ideas, which was called Twilight of the Psychopaths, generated a lot of discussion also a few weeks ago whenever I put it up on the Internet.
It was excellent.
Oh, great. Thank you. Glad you liked it. Do you think that Lobosiewski's notion that psychopaths can infect non-psychopaths and by doing that actually infect whole societies. This is something that's somewhat new. I don't believe any of the sort of standard people who work on psychopathy have made that observation before. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about that. How did he come up with that idea, and how does that work?
Well, I think it wasn't unique to Lobachevsky. As he mentions in his book, he is the compiler of the research of many other scientists who were doing work in more or less a secretive way behind the Iron Curtain, and even before the Iron Curtain was erected, from the times of Lenin and Stalin and so forth, some of the work of some of the Russian scientists who were doing experiments in behavior modification and so forth, you know, like Pavlov, is included in there. And then, of course, there are several other rather famous scientists whose work I can detect in there, though they aren't named specifically. Apparently it was being done secretly, and they were making observations and drawing conclusions and seeing how, you know, these things operate. And, you know, just one typical example is something that was written about by several researchers, and Sebastian Hafner in his book Defying Hitler talked about it, how when a pathological individual is in power, people know, they understand that if they do things that are, you know, also pathological, that they will be excused for those things, that they, you know, that they will just get a nod in their direction. And so therefore people will begin to behave in ways that are pathological that they might ordinarily not have done otherwise if they knew that there was going to be a strict legal sanction against their behavior. that's just one of the ways that it can happen. But then there's another thing that's really important, and this comes from the work of Bob Altmaier, I think his name is, where he writes about the type of personality, the right, you know, right-wing authoritarian personality. And he talks about how people will, there are people who seek a strong leader and also who then exert their own power and control over others beneath them. It's kind of like a pecking order type of society. And in a funny sort of way, you can even think of that the book Lord of the Flies, how the young boys created a hierarchy of a pecking order on a desert island when they were lost and had to come up with ways to survive on their own. So there are the right-wing authoritarian personalities, and then there's also the work that Phil Zimbardo did, the Stanford Prison Experiment.
Right.
That people want, first of all, they want to follow an authority, which is the authoritarian personality, and they also want to belong to an in-group. And there is some suggestion that it's not just any authority that they want to follow, but it's an authority that has a certain righteousness about it. Because, for example, right-wing authoritarian-type persons who would be considered conservative did not look to Bill Clinton for their authority because, you know, he wasn't representing the right standards. You know, when they called him out on the carpet for having illicit affairs or, you know, sexual misconduct, many, many people in the U.S., the right-wing authoritarian types, despite the fact that he represented the top authority in the land, were against him.
Oh, furiously against him in many cases.
Yeah, so for, you know, to say simply that it's just the authority, you know, the surrogate parent, you know, the president or whatever, that the right-wing authoritarian type follows, is it's not quite so simple because this was clearly disproved in the case of Clinton. But then in the case of, say, George Bush, who is far more psychopathic than Clinton ever was.
Maybe saying something. Clinton seems to have his kind of a, well, you know, maybe it's more of a
maybe he's more hidden.
Night.
Yeah, and maybe he's more covert about it. But in any event, because Bush stands up and represents certain things that this right-wing authoritarian type personality likes and identifies with, much of which is like, you know, you can pick on those below you. Clinton represents something, even if it wasn't true, but ideologically he would say, you know, let's have programs to help the poor, to help the needy, to help the hungry, that sort of thing, which was urging people to not pick on those less helpless than themselves, while Bush is saying, let's go out and shoot all the ragheads.
He's kind of enabling the bullies.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, I'm with you so far, Laura. We'll be back for some more in a few moments. This is Kevin Barrett here on Dynamic Duo talking today with Laura Knight Yadjik. Stick around. Today I'm talking with Laura Knight Yadjik. She has a very interesting website, and to find it, you probably could just Google her last name, or the second half of it, which is Jadczyk. That's Jadczyk. Or you can go to the Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance for 9/11 Truth, which is MUJCA.com, and you can click on the radio schedule and find links to a couple of her sites. Laura, we were talking about the obviously aberrant behavior of not just the current leadership, Bush, Cheney and company, and also the people that they've enabled beneath them, but you know, also the whole society kind of gravitating towards this kind of behavior. Now, it's one thing to call these people bullies or authoritarian personalities, and it's another to say that some of them may be clinical psychopaths, as you suggested as a possibility regarding the president. So maybe you could explain to the listeners just what exactly is a clinical psychopath.
Well, a clinical psychopath is is described in the titles of three books, Without Conscience, The Mask of Sanity, and Snakes in Suits. The psychopath is not, as many people think, necessarily a violent, aggressive, or even criminal individual.
Right. Let me stop you there and say those books are by Robert Hare, H-A-R-E.
Robert Hare, Hervey Cleckley, and Hare and Babiak.
Right. And then Martha Stout has also written a couple.
Martha Stout has written a really nice book. She uses the term sociopath, and I think that's because many psychologists are trying to shy away from the word psychopath because it has been so corrupted by connecting it with mad dog serial killers like Hannibal Lecter and so on. But you know, I think that if you try to clarify things through, say, the DSM-4, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the Bible for diagnosing, that you find that using the word sociopath is a way of describing behavior that's more external or viewable than something that's hidden inside, such as a lack of conscience. And so by doing that, you would miss a lot of the true psychopaths who do most of the destructive things in our society, because they wear a complete mask of sanity. And the real issue is a conscience. They don't have one. And that means they really don't have one. Of course, Martha, in her book, moved very close to asking this really big, important question, which is, what is conscience? And she talks about it in certain ways, and she finally comes to the conclusion that basically a conscience is based on love, that conscience is a feeling of obligation to other people based on emotional attachment.
Right. And that's a really interesting concept. She opposes it to the Freudian idea of superego, which is kind of a parental, controlling, disciplinary little voice in the head.
Introject.
Right, an authoritarian. But superego isn't really based on love.
No.
And, Martha thinks that this love is a sort of a cosmic connection, in a way, between all beings and especially all people, so we can sort of empathize a little bit with other people based on this kind of love. And the lack of that seems to be the chief characteristic of the psychopath.
Well, Martha gets a little bit antsy when she starts approaching the spiritual aspect, but she almost comes out and says that psychopaths are soulless. And this is an interesting thing, because Hervey Cleckley came very close to saying the same thing himself. He and butted around it, but that's pretty much what he said. And if you look around the world and look at what's happening in the world, and if you study history, which is my main thing, because I come at this from a historical point of view, you see that for the vast majority of historical times, and probably even prehistorical times, we can't tell except archaeologically about those times, but there has been a vast preponderance of what appears to be absolutely soulless behavior on the part of the rulers of our world and those people who follow them or become their tools. It's really frightening when you review what has really happened on this planet and continues to happen even today.
Right. That was kind of the point of my essay, Twilight of the Psychopaths, but it appears, in a sense, that almost throughout recorded history, we've had this kind of ruling class of people without conscience, and you can sort of see why that would happen, since so-called civilization is really kind of a protection racket, run by some kind of military chieftain who then organizes a bunch of killers to threaten and kill peasants in order to steal their food, then redistribute the food to the soldiers, that is the killers, to keep the whole thing going, and the scribes, who become the keepers of the key to literacy. And that really makes you
Well,
rethink.
Well, don't forget the role of religion in here, because throughout history it has been religion that has kept people in line. Religion and power, politics, have always been very closely intertwined.
And that's pretty ironic, though, because religion is supposed to deal with the domain of the soul.
Well, it's supposed to, but it doesn't necessarily do it in the way. In a way, religion is the biggest psychopath of them all, because it wears an almost complete mask of sanity. It presents itself as a very kind, authoritative, benevolent caretaker of the human race, and it really isn't. It's pretty much designed and set up from the get-go to just control people. And historically speaking, you know, that's really, you know, I come from a fundamentalist Christian background. I'm a recovered fundamentalist, in fact. And it took me many years and a lot of research to come to the realization about religion that I did. And, you know, I don't want to offend anybody, you know, so please understand that. But there are several books that everybody ought to read, and so they can get really clear about this. And the first of those books would be Victor Kluge and Bill Napier's The Cosmic Winter and The Cosmic Serpent, which talk about how religions originated. And then other books would be Burton Mack's books on the New Testament and John Van Cedar's and Thomas L. Thompson's book on the Old Testament. And once you read these books and get a really clear picture from scholarly studies of religion and astronomical and historical studies of religion, you come to the realization that you've been had all along. You've been had.
Well, this sounds a little bit like what some of my listeners may have seen in Zeitgeist, the film that's gone viral. Part one of Zeitgeist deals with a certain take on the history of religion, which argues that it's all kind of a fraud and it's based on sort of cosmic astrological symbolism.
It is. But that's, and here I really want to quickly interject this. That
Make
is
it really
not,
quick. 20 seconds.
That's not to deny the spiritual nature of humankind.
Okay, well, on that I agree 100%. We'll be right back. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm having a conversation with Laura Knight Yadchik. She is the author of 8 books and the editor of the wonderful book Political Ponerology. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Kevin Barrett. Today I'm talking with Laura Knight Yadchik. She has written 8 books and edited Political Ponerology, which has kind of set off a whole lot of interesting fireworks all over the Internet. We're talking about psychopaths, people without conscience or without soul, depending on how you define them. And, Laura, you were just saying that you see religion as being essentially kind of a racket for keeping people in line with the masters of religion, like the masters of the rest of civilization, tending to be these soulless people. I guess I don't see it quite that way. Taking a somewhat idealistic view of how Islam, which is the religion I happen to adhere to, has operated through history, the way I would describe it, which of course would be, you know, and gently, I guess, would be that the rules that Islam brings to the society where it operates are there to create a peaceful, harmonious society in which people can develop their souls to the fullest possible potential. Now, most people take that opportunity only so far, and a few people take it very far indeed and become the great souls or the saints or the friends of God, as we Muslims call them. But I don't see it as operating as just a sort of a psycho power protection racket, although sometimes it can be misused that way. Am I completely off track here?
Well, I would just urge you to read Victor Kluge and Burton Mack and John Van Cedar's and Thomas L. Thompson and just kind of, you know, apply some of the you know, the studies that they have done in the realm of the Old Testament and the New Testament, and, you know, a little crossover application to Islam, because, you know, after all, Islam is based on the validity of the Old Testament, and Thompson and Van Cedar's and others, Giovanni Garbini, the Italian Semiticist, have pretty well established that, you know, it's all a big fraud. So if you have a religion that's based on a fraud that's, that came before it, how much validity can it have as a religion? Which is not to say that the social rules and the social constructs and the ways of interacting with one another are not a good and benevolent thing, because those things cross all cultural boundaries. If you look at the period in time when all the great religions, formed up, you know, there's some very basic things about all of them that are pretty much the same. So, you know, it's clear that these rules of conduct, these spiritual values, are something that are almost genetic in people with souls, you know, people who have a conscience and who have empathy. And if they find, you know, that there is a religious context in which they are better able to express that, then, you know, I have no problem with it. I'm just pointing out that religion is the perfect foil for psychopathy, and always has been. It's like anything else. It's the place where it can lurk and breed and grow. And you look at the examples of the Christianity is a pretty nefarious example, because throughout the history of Western civilization, Christianity has been a violent, oppressive force. And yet there are many, many people who talk about the teachings of Jesus, you know, love your neighbor and love God and so on, and the higher spiritual values. And there are many very good Christians, well, a few at least, I think. I have my doubts anymore, because many of those that I used to think were really very good Christians have become right-wing conservatives. So,
right, well,
you know,
I would hold David Ray Griffin up there as my example of a Christian. I admire.
Yeah, exactly. And there are, you know, Martin Luther King and many, many others. But it's the perfect foil for the growth of psychopathy, because psychopathy is a mask of sanity. It's all about lies. It's all about using religion as a control system. And that's why, you know, how and why Judaism came to exist as a control system. And this is pretty firmly established in the works of these scholars.
I'll have to look at that, because I haven't read any of the scholars you've quoted, even though I have studied some comparative religion. So we'll have to maybe exchange some notes through the email on those particular books.
Well, yeah.
You know, the kind of approaches that I've looked at through Iliadi and people like that, as well as the so-called traditionalists, and
mm-hmm.
that's what got me interested in Islam, was the traditionalists, who were a bunch of Western people who, in the early part of the century, started gravitating to Islam for the most part, although a few chose other religions, saying that the traditional spiritual teachings of these religions could not be separated from the religions themselves, and thus anybody who wanted to get anywhere spiritually really needed the shell of a standard traditional religion. And so after studying comparative religion from this particular angle, it seems to me that there's a whole other side to religion. You know, they tell you, for example, in comparative religion, that every society is religious, that, you know, all sorts of, you could call democracy an American religion. You know,
mm-hmm.
you can't get away from the notion of the religious, really. And so generalizing about it and saying it enables psychopathy might be a little bit just sort of like, you know, generalizing about society, saying, you know, society or, you know, hierarchical society also enables psychopathy. But
it does.
You can't get away from it. But you're in
right.
stuck in society.
And there's a problem there also, and that is that for, you know, most of the last 2,000 years, Judeo-Christianity has dominated the discourse. It has led to, the various contentious issues between, say, the Catholic Church and the emergence of Protestantism and so forth, have led to, say, the birth of science, which is an interesting thing, that religion, the ideas of the Protestants led to the Renaissance and then to certain scientific ideas, you know, getting rid of the whole, the sun goes around the earth thing. So that when that happened, it was like the dog biting the hand that fed it, so to speak, because, you know, science then immediately turned against religion and discounted religion entirely. But at the same time, it excluded it from scientific study. It was, you know, it's really kind of a bizarre thing that the very thing that created it, you know, is excluded from study, and all of the attitudes of science are such that they're based on certain Judeo-Christian principles, even excluding Judeo-Christianity from scientific scrutiny. So this is something that's been being corrected in the last, say, 25, 30 years. a lot of it going on, you know, very quietly in academic surroundings, but there is some research, some studying going on that is really astounding, and I would really urge you to have a look at some of this material, because it shows just how cunning and sly this problem is.
Okay, well, I will try and do that. I respect your ability to bring new and challenging ideas out there to people's attention, as you did in editing Political Ponerology, and I'll want to look at some of your other work as well. Getting back to the idea of psychopathy being a way of explaining what's going on in the U.S. today, I think it's Dr. Justin Frank in his book Bush on the Couch diagnosed Bush as possibly, I think, borderline, but more of a narcissist than a psychopath per se. Anyway, we'll have to pick that up when we come back. So stick around. This is Kevin Barrett talking with Laura Knight Yadchik about Ponerology, the science of psychopaths in high places. We'll be right back. We'll be having a bunch of great guests in near future radio shows. You can find out about the schedule at the Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance for 9/11 Truth, MUJCA.com. William Rodriguez is on my show tomorrow night on an evil rival radio network. Deborah Sweet of World Can't Wait comes on next Monday, same time, same channel, right here on GCNLive.com. On Tuesday night, on yet a third evil rival radio network, Mikey Weinstein of MilitaryReligiousFreedom.org will be telling us about how these crazed fundamentalists, exactly, perfect examples of the kind of bad religion that Laura's talking about, are taking over the U.S. military. And then I'll down the road, I'll be having some other great guests, including former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura, and I'll be having a return engagement by Lynn Margulis, who is widely regarded as one of the planet's leading scientists, who has changed the science of biology, ecology, and evolution as much as just about anybody since Darwin. So it'll be great to have her on again. All right, today I'm talking with Laura Knight Yadchik. She is the editor of Political Ponerology, the author of 8 books, and we've been talking about the science of psychopaths in power, which is one way of defining ponerology. And so, Laura, in terms of the actual, you know, psychopathy in the White House, do you actually peg Bush as a genuine psychopath, somebody without a soul, somebody without a conscience?
Well, he's got all the signs and symptoms, you know, because one of the things that Hare talks about when he describes, you know, the symptomatology of psychopathy is, or psychopathy, as some people prefer to call it. I'm a Southern girl. You know, what can I say? He talks about the peculiar speech and the mangling of sentences, you know, using words inappropriately.
Bushisms.
Yeah, what they call Bushisms. Those are absolutely typical signs of the psychopath. And Hare, in his book Without Conscience, you know, lists many, many cases, gives exact examples of criminal psychopaths using exactly those same types of little slips of speech, you know, being unable to control their words because they think in a different way, and they also move their hands in a different way when they speak, in short little chopping motions, or little, you know, like they beat time with their hands while they're talking, and Bush also does that. So when you put those two, they're really kind of tiny little symptoms together with, you know, his behavior and some of the things he said, like, you know, his little sneering remark about Carla Faye Tucker begging for mercy before she was executed, and his, you know, his attitude about Iraq, Iran, so forth. You know, the whole picture, you put it all together, and he comes across as a really good candidate, in my opinion. I'm not an expert. I can't diagnose anybody. I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist. But as a researcher who has really read, you know, cases, and more cases, and analyses, and technical papers, and academic papers, you know, he's a good candidate, I'd say.
I would think so, too. And it makes me wonder, how could somebody who's such a good candidate for being diagnosed as a psychopath, who does not have a terribly high IQ, it appears, certainly not much of a scholarly record, not much of a list of accomplishments, how did somebody like that end up in the White House?
Well, because he has something else that the psychopath has, which is that ability to project authority, the thing we were talking about earlier, and also to lie extremely cunningly, to lie, you know, so well and so authoritatively that people take everything he says, you know, at least certain kinds of people take everything he says as the gospel truth, you know, no pun intended.
And the rest of us have figured out that if his lips move, he's lying.
Well, yeah, and this is, well, you know, this goes back to another thing that, another reason that religion is such a good hiding place for psychopaths, because, you know, Christianity teaches that, you know, everybody has a soul. And, you know, there are unsaved souls and there are saved souls and so forth. But basically, everybody has a soul. And this is a big lie. It is a complete lie because it is quite clear that there are many people who do not have souls. Now, whether this came about through a mutation, and, you know, because I tend to think, because, of, you know, I study spiritual matters more or less scientifically, I tend to think that the presence or absence of a soul is possibly determined by your genetics. And so what if the genes that help interface with the spiritual nature were lost or damaged in a mutation incident somewhere, you know, 6,000, 10,000 years ago, and there is a line of genetic psychopaths that began to thread its way through human society, and because of their breeding habits, they tend to reproduce rather well because, you know, the men, the psychopathic men, they go on the move, and they, you know, they breed indiscriminately, you know, 10 wives, you know, 25 kids from, you know, however many women, and they don't even have to be married to them, you know, rape is a great way of spreading the psychopathic genes. You know, it just strikes me that, and you know, there is that funny little website that talks about the possibility that Barbara Bush was the daughter of Aleister Crowley.
Oh no, you're my first guest that actually brought that up. You know, that's the one conspiracy theory that even I can barely handle.
I mean, I just cracked up when I read it. I said this is just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. But then, you know, you look at her face and you look at Crowley's face and you say,
those pictures.
And
mirror images.
And whoever put it together, they actually did collect some data, and good Lord, you know, there are some really crazy things going on this planet, so for all we know, you know, and psychopathy is thought by many researchers to be a sex-linked gene carried by the mother, passed on to the son.
Oh, boy. I when I'm studying conspiracy theories from a folklorist perspective, and of course you should put that in quotes because, you know, the government's own story of 9/11 is, of course, an outrageous conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
But what the kinds of things that tend to get called conspiracy theories, which we do study in folklore,
mm-hmm.
if you want to, you know, come up with a sort of a mathematical formula for figuring out which ones are interesting, you can multiply their plausibility based on a certain kind of evidence. That is, could this actually be true? You know, by their complete outrageousness. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's like an inverse
there.
Ratio.
Right,
you know?
Right. And this one actually scores pretty well because...
You're kidding. You're kidding. Oh, my God, that is funny. But, I mean, I read it and I said, you know, I immediately discard. But anyhow, that's just one of the things that I think about when I'm looking at these things because, you know, Barbara Bush is a Pierce. And the Pierces were Percys. Well, you know, my great-grandmother was a Pierce, you know, so I'm very distantly related to Barbara Bush.
Oh.
But I can tell you right now that my line of the Percys was not those crazy people that she comes from because, you know, I mean, I just have no truck with that kind of thing.
So hopefully you're not a descendant of Aleister Crowley and a cousin of Barbara
Bush.
Oh,
God. Well, no. But... But it's a funny thing, and the fact that, you know, that I think about this issue of the soul and soullessness and consciousnessness, you just begin to understand how it can spread in society, not only genetically, you know, because American society is adaptive for psychopathy. I mean, you know, the dog-eat-dog world of capitalism.
Right, Martha Stout makes that point pretty clearly.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the perfect environment for it to grow and spread. And then the problem is when psychopaths get on top and they start making the rules and think about the legal system. I mean, the legal system is set up to, you know, to make it possible for psychopaths to get off because you have somebody sitting there to swearing to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. This oath is going to act on a person of conscience. they will take this oath and they will tell the truth because they believe in this oath. A psychopath will not. He'll swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, and mean not a word of it, and lie through his teeth all the way down the line. So the jury, who doesn't know either of the people or anything about them or their past or their acquaintances or associations, or, and they're not allowed to know those things, have to evaluate the case based on just what is presented in court. And if the psychopath is a good liar, he wins.
Right.
And the guy,
and even if he's not any better of a liar than the other person is a truth teller, the jury might split the difference.
Yeah, so the system is set up for psychopaths.
Yep, I'm afraid you have a point there, and we'll be back to take off on that point when we come back after the break. So stick around. This is Kevin Barrett talking with Laura Knight Jedczyk about Ponerology, the Science of Psychopaths and Power. Well, today I'm talking with Laura Knight Jedczyk. She is the editor of Political Ponerology and the author of 8 books. Her approach to the psychology of George W. Bush is one of the most interesting I've come across. Ranks right up there with that of Paul Levy, author of The Madness of George W. Bush, who has a somewhat different but also spiritually informed take on the craziness that's taken over our land. Well, Laura, we do have a call, so let's go ahead and bring on the caller. It's Rudy from Michigan. How you doing, Rudy?
Not bad. How you doing?
Pretty good.
I was really interested in the topic you're talking about, and I was wondering if you guys could discuss how a psychopath uses their lack of consciousness to somehow control other people's subconscious and in some form brainwash them into doing what it is they want them to do.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you go ahead, Laura? You're the expert on this.
Well, I don't know if I'm the expert on it, but I can tell you what I've observed. The psychopath, first of all, as I mentioned, they come across as very authoritative. They also have these word glitches, you know, like blank spots in their speech. And what tends to happen, because most people believe that everybody has a soul and everybody is like them, the normal person will project onto the psychopath and fill in the blanks. It's like driving down the road at night and you see a sign ahead that says M blank T-E-L, and you fill in the O because you know it says motel. So what happens when psychopaths talk and they use emotional words but don't necessarily exhibit those emotions, we tend to project onto them, you know, what we ourselves feel. Okay, so that's the first thing. The second thing is that a psychopath can use these emotional words to trigger in a person certain emotional states that cause them to think a certain way. Now, the psychopath knows very well what they're doing to the person because they are masters of human psychology, normal human psychology, that is. And at the same time, the psychopath may pretend that they, too, are feeling emotional. They may use words and they may mimic certain behaviors. They may even cry, you know, shed a tear, crocodile tears. But all the while they're doing this, they are completely cold and calculating inside, and they are constantly observing the effect of everything they're saying and doing. And they can work a person this way and that way and the other way and get them to, you know, to actually believe that black is white, up is down, and red is green, and inside is outside by completely confusing them. There's a process called transmarginal inhibition that was described by Ivan Pavlov. And there are several techniques that can induce a state of hysteria in a normal human being by playing on their emotions. When that person is in an induced state of hysteria, the handler, the programmer, can, at that point, when they're in that hysterical state, you know, make pronouncements, authoritative statements that the individual will accept as true. In a sense, it's kind of like the Stockholm Syndrome, you know, where you abuse a person, you cause them emotional distress, you delay things, you put them in all kinds of stressful situations, and then all of a sudden you say something kind or seemingly feeling toward them, and then they, you know, they're so grateful for your kindness in their state of terrible distress that they begin to look on you as some sort of savior, and then whatever you say while they are in that state, they will believe that. They will come to adopt that as a fact and as truth because it's being said authoritatively to them while they're in a hysterical emotional state. Look at 9/11. For days and days and days, you know, we watched repeatedly while these jets, you know, were flying into the buildings were collapsing, you know, the news programs were, you know, were so focused on putting everybody in the United States into a state of hysteria so that the story that the government had cooked up to explain everything that had happened was then pronounced authoritatively, and that is the reason why so many people came to believe it and why they didn't rise up in mass and demand, you know, better explanations for what happened, because the authoritative pronouncements were made while they were in a state of transmarginal inhibition.
That's what Doug Rushkoff describes in his book Coercion, which was my inspiration in the other biggest viral essay I wrote other than The Twilight of the Psychopaths, which I believe was called Apocalypse of Coercion. And Rushkoff says that this technique is used by car salesmen as well as mind control specialists. They pretty much separate the person from their normal sense of self in the world through torture or massive confusion, the sort of thing that they did to us on 9/11. And once they've done that, then they move in and regress the target to a
heavy on the shock.
Right, and step in as that parental authority figure that you were describing.
I have one other comment. I also read quite a bit of stuff about covert aggressors and their bag of tricks, which to me seems like basically a psychopath with another name.
Absolutely.
And the one thing I see that is very telling of the way they act is when they use a defensive attack in order to disarm you so that they can then subliminally give you whatever their ideas are and put them in your head.
So what is a defensive attack?
Yeah.
Well, it's when they set up a situation where something you've said, they take it as offensive. So they show that they're hurt by your words.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you
yeah,
believe
yeah.
it. And so now you've been disarmed to defend yourself. Then they attack you under the defense of them being hurt when they really aren't. So you accept almost anything they'll say to you at that minute.
Yeah,
right.
that goes to another one, another line of attack, which is where the criminal or the psychopath or whoever attacks themselves, you know, to feign an injury or not to feign, but they actually have an injury. They injure themselves to make it appear that they are innocent. That's what the whole Pentagon attack was about. That was the fake self injury. To, you know, to indicate that, well, you know, of course, Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld, you know, they were all there and they were being attacked too. Their lives were at risk too, so they couldn't possibly be guilty. But it was a very precision attack designed to make sure that, you know, that they themselves were never in any physical danger, while at the same time it could be made to appear that they were.
Right. They hit the opposite side of the Pentagon from where the top brass has their offices. And then, of course, they did kill 20-some budget analysts and accountants the day after Rumsfeld had announced that $2.3 trillion had gone missing from the Pentagon budget.
Absolutely. And this one is so old that why people don't think about it, you know, just astonishes me. I mean, look at Agatha Christie and all of her whodunit mystery stories. I mean, that was one of the more typical situations that she would write about, would be where the criminal would fake an injury on themselves to make it look like they were innocent. So,
yeah, that's interesting, because Martha Stout actually talks about the routine that psychopaths pull by making themselves out to be very
victim.
Yeah, the victimization thing, right? The self-victimization.
Yeah, the pity, pity me, pity.
The pity play. Yeah,
and that goes back to the covert aggressive. George Simon wrote a book called Wolves in Sheep's Clothing. And I really think that the majority of what he is describing is psychopathic behavior behind a very well-crafted mask of sanity.
Okay. That sounds pretty convincing to me. I think this is one of the more interesting tangential areas I've stumbled upon since getting interested in 9/11 truth. Hope you agree. We'll be back to talk some more. This is Kevin Barrett talking with Laura Knight Yadchik about tonerology, the science of evil, psychopathy in high places. We'll be right back. Today I'm talking with Laura Knight Yadchik about tonerology, the science of psychopathy. And and its relationship to political power. Don't forget that part. We do have another caller. It's I was told it was Julie Ann from Whitewater, but I know somebody named Joanne from Whitewater. Is this Joanne or Julie Ann?
Yes, this is Joanne, right.
I suspect it might be. How are you?
A little bit. Really good. A fantastic show as usual. I've got a question about Barack Obama. And
okay.
I'm wondering about his hold on followers, especially young people. And I'm very, very worried about this, especially as it relates to larger policy issues and larger issues in which he could be involved. Again, we've had a candidate or two. Ron Paul is one of the candidates, of course, and we've got perhaps Cynthia McKinney, who would be opening some of the books about 9/11 and certainly exposing some of these important issues. And I'm wondering whether or not Barack Obama even understands these issues, or if they're on his radar screen. However, his cult-like followers will take his role of reality, his version of reality, whatever that is.
Well, Laura, what do you think? I guess, you know, we're talking about psychopathy, and Barack Obama, I haven't really studied him enough to have a sense of it, but I guess when you have highly charismatic leaders, you always want to kind of vet them for this, don't you?
Well, you know, it's funny because I was looking at him just a little bit the other day, and there was some stuff going around on the internet where they were claiming that there was some old-timey African prophet who had predicted that the United States would be taken down by a man, a son of their people, and it just happened to be the same tribe that his grandfather or something came from.
You know, I saw that, too. I think that was reported by Sorcha Fowl, who
I consider
kind of only a medium sort of reliable source.
I'm not sure. Some of the things that this group comes up with is pretty interesting, and I've got the idea that it's a psyop. But,
right.
You know, they take things that are very interesting and unusual, and they give it the twist at the end or take it in exactly the wrong direction.
Mm.
And so I started wondering, you know, why are they trying to, you know, paint, you know, Obama with such negative brushstrokes? So that piqued my interest, and then they mentioned his genealogy, so I had a look at his genealogy. It was rather, you know, boring and mundane. He did have a grandmother who abandoned her child, you know, which would suggest maybe, you know, a little psychopathy there, but then, you know, mother to son type thing. But then that wouldn't pass to him because it was on his father's side. On his mother's side, there wasn't anything terribly interesting other than a suicide, and that doesn't necessarily indicate any deviant genetics.
Isn't he related?
Wait a minute, Laura. Is it really that genetic? Because I thought I read in Stout and Hare and so on that it was about 50% genetic.
Well, it's actually more than that. When you start getting into the studies, you find out it's about 80% genetic, 20% environment. Especially when you're dealing with psychopathy. Now, if you're, you know, sociopathy and other things like that, it's a little bit different. But trying to get a handle on him, you know, I'm just trying to look at him, and I'm thinking about it. And the main thing I think about when I look at these things is that it's really not about anybody getting elected, because I don't think that the American people have elected anybody for a very long time. Number one, because of the electoral college system. That's the first thing. The second thing is it's not who votes, but who counts the votes. And we know with the electronic voting that there's probably not any real chance of anybody worthwhile being elected. So it strikes me that Obama and Clinton are really just, you know, they're almost like puppets, and they're being run and they're being danced around, and it's all a facade, a farce, to try to convince the American people that they still live, you know, in a democracy, that they still have some say, even if it's the choice of the lesser of several evils. As for Obama's power over his cult-like following, you can almost understand that because, you know, here we have a black man, and he's Muslim, isn't he?
No. I wish we had a Muslim about to be elected.
Well,
vote for him.
Yeah, there were some rumblings that he was a closet Muslim, and he's a black man, and he's young, and he's good-looking, and he's got a good-looking family, and, you know, I mean, it's just natural for him to get kind of a cult-like following because, you know, he seems like something fresh and new and different, and everybody is really, really tired of what's old and stale and bad. So,
right.
But the tendency for people to form cult-like, you know, followings around anybody is pretty normal. I mean, they've done a study recently at the University of Leeds that shows that it only takes a minority of 5% of a group of people to influence the other 95% as, you know, which way they go in terms of just moving around. And the same thing is true when you're dealing with psychological issues. It takes a very small percentage of people to influence, you know, a very large number of people, especially if that small percent, you know, come across as very authoritative. But is it really going to matter even who gets elected? It's the same power controllers behind the scenes that are going to be controlling whoever it is.
Well, I agree with you there, Laura. I have had this debate on my shows, though, between people like Webster Tarpley, who think Obama is especially bad, because Webster's idea here, of course, is that Zbigniew Brzezinski is not exactly just Obama's chief advisor, but in fact, according to Webster, Brzezinski handpicked Obama to be a candidate.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Right, just as he and Rockefeller, his controller, picked Jimmy Carter back in 76. So the idea here would be, according to Webster, that Brzezinski is a Russian hater. He absolutely detests the Russians. He's a revanchist, out for revenge for the perceived slights that Poland has gotten from the Russians. So he's a very dangerous guy to get in there, because he might lead us into war with the Russians. And, of course, they're a lot better armed than the Iranians and the Iraqis. Now, from my perspective, though, I also would ask Webster, and I have debated him on this on the air, whether it might not be a nice change to get somebody who, rather than beating up on these poor countries that can't defend themselves and killing millions of innocent people, somebody who picked on a country that could defend itself, number one, might not get into a shooting war, because, of course, with nuclear weapons, you just don't get into shooting wars. And number two, he'll call off this evil war against the Middle East, which from my perspective would be a great thing. Maybe he'll even call off some of the whole assault on the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. So there's that counter-argument. And we've gone back and forth here. But ultimately, Laura, I think I come down with you on saying that I'm not convinced that it really makes a dime's worth of difference.
Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons why I'm concerned is that Obama has a way of reaching people that bypasses the brain. And at least with Hillary Clinton, there are some things that she says that once... Oh.
Okay, well, we'll have to pick it up after the break about what it is that Hillary says that, I guess, goes through the rational part of the brain rather than the charismatic hero-worshipping part that Obama supposedly reaches, according to this line of thought. We'll be back to pick it up in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett talking with Laura Knight Yadchik on Dynamic Duo right here on GCNLive.com. Jack, you're listening to GCNLive.com. And actually, that song is kind of ironic given the topic of conversation, psychopathy and political power, because, of course, John Lennon was one of those people with a conscience and who had accumulated a certain amount of power through his charisma over other people, and he seems to have been taken out by the psychopath in the same way that so many other influential people who have likewise had a little bit more conscience than the average powerful person seem to get taken out. Look at JFK. After he went toe-to-toe with the Russians over the missile crisis, he seemed to rethink militarism and, you know, rethink this situation where millions and millions of people could be incinerated at the touch of a button, and he wanted to demilitarize, and the psychopath took him out. And, you know, look at these other folks who get taken out, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, perhaps Bobby Kennedy, and all these leaders in other countries, too, you know, Mossadegh in Iran, and the Arbenz in Guatemala, and on and on and on. These people who have extra conscience seem to get killed, leading one to suspect that the people who are running the show have a lot less conscience than the average person. Am I barking up the right tree here, Laura?
I think you're barking up the right tree. I've written exactly the same things myself. You see people like Princess Diana, who spoke out against the landmines, and John Lennon, and JFK, and Martin Luther King, and Bobby Kennedy, and just, you know, the list is, what was his name, Paul Wellstone?
Right.
The list is rather long, and when you consider the fact that these people had so much charisma, and they had position, and they could have turned public opinion in such a way. And so obviously somebody knew that and decided to take them out, which is another clue to the awareness of the psychopath of who and what they are and what they're doing. They really do know who they and what they are, and they are connected.
That's a frightening thought. And that does lead us, though, to a slightly different take on the caller's question about Obama and his charisma, because it does seem to me that charisma is sort of a two-faced item, a Janus-like quality, because it can take people in the wrong direction, of course. Look at Hitler and his wonderful speeches. Or it can take people in potentially the right direction, as JFK was in a position to do. They couldn't touch him because he had that that kind of hypnotic hold over the people. He could propose these outrageous things like not just the atmospheric test ban treaty, but he was ready to radically demilitarize, and the people would have gone along with it because they were hypnotized by a good guy. Now, what if Obama turns out to be a good guy?
Well, there's always that possibility, but I would like to hear what the caller was going to say about Hillary Clinton. Because
Sorry, I cut her off. Joanne, you still there?
Oh, yes, definitely. I love the conversation, and I didn't mind waiting. My general point was, with Hillary Clinton, one hears the policy wonk who's comparing different early childhood programs, whatever. I've asked her some questions in large forums in the past, and she knows every policy and can compare them very readily. As opposed to Barack Obama, during his rallies, he takes very few questions. Almost everything is about him. He's a blank slate that people are filling in with their own ideas and impressions and all of that. What's interesting is that I saw that Teddy Kennedy was trying to fill in that blank slate with Kennedy imagery and all of that, and almost like a barnacle on a ship or a parasite on a larger animal, fill in and try to gain from that larger creature.
Well, one thing that I'd like to point out to people, because Kennedy has been so defamed by the right-wing authoritarians, since he died and before he died and so forth. They point out the fact that his father, Joe Kennedy, used the mob to get him elected. And my thought has always been that, yes, he did use the mob to get himself elected because he had plans. And in the U.S., that's almost the only way you can get elected is to lay low, to fly under the radar, to appear to be a blank slate, and then when you get in position, then you can start putting things together and doing things. His only problem was, of course, that he didn't really understand the nature of the psychopath and how far they really are willing to go to maintain their power and their control and their dominance. Obama, being a blank slate, could be exactly that, a really blank slate, just a puppet. He could also be somebody who's flying under the radar. It's hard to tell at this point. There's just not enough data points to go on.
And sometimes people change. With JFK, I'm not convinced that he was particularly outstanding until he had that experience of being close to the nuclear brink during the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962, which apparently reawakened some conscience in him. Also, of course, he apparently started taking LSD with an associate of Timothy Leary's, who was committed to the cause of radical disarmament, and apparently that may have had an effect on him also. Interestingly, that was the wife of Cord Meyer. Cord Meyer was the head of the CIA's Operation Mockingbird, which controlled the media at that time. His wife, Mary Meyer, was sleeping with JFK, taking LSD with him, and reporting back to Timothy Leary on her effort to get the president on board with radical disarmament stuff. So it was pretty interesting that Cord Meyer, it turns out, was the leading figure in the JFK assassination plot, according to the recent confession by former CIA agent Howard Hunt, who said he took part in it, too.
I just have one more quick question, and I'll let other callers jump in. But I'm actually interested in the possibility that John McCain could have enough animosity toward the Bush administration that John McCain could open the books on 9/11 and perhaps lead us all toward the war crime trials that we're looking forward to.
Oh, be still my heart.
There could be enough lying beneath the surface in John McCain's psychology, and certainly he was trashed by the Bush administration very heavily in South Carolina in year 2000, in his race.
We can only wish.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I mean, McCain sounds to me like he's even crazier than Bush and Cheney. No, that's what Pat Buchanan said. He said McCain makes Cheney look like Gandhi. So I don't know. I hope you're right.
That's quite a statement.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks very much. I'll sign off. Bye.
Okay, thanks, Joanne. Well, So can this new science of ponerology, the study of psychopathy and power, help us evaluate these kinds of alleged decisions that we make when we go to the voting booth? Can it really help us understand what's going on?
Yes, because the unique thing about the book is that it tells you how these networks form, what kinds of psychopaths play which kinds of roles in terms of the network, and how they extend their networks into society. And you know how they use their ability to charm, to coerce, or to mislead. There's the schizoidal psychopath who generally, you know, does a lot of theoretical writing on which certain ideas are based. And for example, the neoconservatives and their adherence to the Straussian philosophy. Strauss was probably a schizoidal psychopath, and there are, you know, some definite deficits in his philosophies that the neocons have followed. And another example is Milton Friedman and his, you know, trickle-down economics thing. That's, you know, completely a schizoidal psychopath work, and the basis for the shock doctrine.
No, I would totally be with you on the neocons and Strauss. With Friedman, I have to think about it. But, you know, there's always time to think, and we'll have a few minutes to think before we come back. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking about ponerology with Laura Knight Yadjik. Stick around. Today, I'm talking about ponerology, the science of evil in high places, and psychopathy, and so on, with Laura Knight Yadjik. We do have another caller. It's Carl from Montreal. How you doing, Carl?
Hey, it's a great topic you have on there discussing tonight. I can't agree more. I wish you had this guest on earlier. It kind of relates to my own experiences with people, you know. And I
Carl, you know, Laura, you mentioned that incident where Bush just really brutally and insensitively insulted, was it Carla Faye Tucker right before her execution?
Yeah.
Well, Carl here is calling from incarceration in Canada, and the main reason he's locked up is because, Carl, you drew a political cartoon that was satirizing that horrible incident. Can you describe that cartoon?
Well, it had Bush standing before Almighty God, and it had the words, "Please don't kill me," and it's kind of saying it in the same kind of manner, you know, in that mocking manner, the way that, you know, Bush had mocked Carla Faye Tucker with those words.
The Secret Service apparently didn't appreciate your satire. Yeah,
And also, well, you know, like I hearing her topic about the religious issue, and I agree a lot with what she's saying. I'm a Christian, but I don't accept Catholicism or Protestant theology because I grew up with family of Catholic and Protestant background, and I started going to churches, and I started seeing all the ignorance and the people that didn't have understanding of the Bible, and it seemed like there was just a lot of, you know, blindness, people following more traditions, and I started searching for answers, and I started seeing that, you know, a lot of people were just going off of what, you know, what they think they know. And I started finding a lot of error and that's a whole other story. So I started finding a lot of similarities between, you know, the Bible and the Quran, where the Bible teaches submission to God and it also teaches the oneness of God. But I see that a lot of, you know, people might disagree with me, a lot of listeners, of how the certain churches interpret the oneness of God as a oneness of essence or philosophical oneness, instead, you know, and I see there's a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of the psychopaths, people, you know, tend to follow these charismatic leaders and these people, you know, tend to buy into anything that they're told instead of looking, you know, for answers on their own. They're kind of steered in a certain direction, which often leads us down the wrong road.
That probably happens with religion some, and maybe, Laura, you can respond, because you were saying that, in general, you know, religions are perfect vehicles for psychopaths, and that they're, you know, they're mythology that's designed for manipulation, but maybe, you know, it depends partly on the way people approach them.
Well, one of the things that religion can be used to do is, like I mentioned before, is they can convince everybody that everybody has a soul. This, of course, you know, gives a perfect out for the psychopath who, you know, I don't think has one. I mean, I'm really treading into spiritual matters here, but then I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, so I don't have a reputation to lose. I can say what I want. So.
Right. Well, you know, the Quran, though, Laura, actually does give us a good picture of psychopaths, although, you know, it may be a little broader than that, but it talks about people whose hearts, they have rust on their hearts.
Well, then, the great Sufi Sheikh Ibn al-Arabi said that some men are born men and leave life as pigs, you know, so
right,
exactly. So they can lose whatever they have. But the thing is that, you know, about this cartoon, you know, Bush pleading, oh, please don't kill me, you know, at the pearly gates or God or whatever. The sad thing is if psychopaths don't have souls, that means they don't pay for their crimes when they die. And that, you know, that seems just so, you know, monumentally unfair. But you know, as I was saying, that religion can be used to conceal the activity of the psychopath, to obtain favors for them, to get control for them. You know, it's been historically used repeatedly to, you know, control large numbers of people. And I just recently did a series of articles, or I'm still working on it, talking about how religion has morphed and changed over the centuries through interactions with different events in medieval Europe and so forth, and how, you know, the witch trials came along and you know, what they did to outspoken women. You know, that was just an excuse to get rid of any woman who had confidence, who had any material property. After the Hundred Years' War, there were a lot of women who were widows, and they were in charge of their property, and they were assertive, and they were and the men who were in charge were a little bit afraid of this, and they had to find a way to get rid of these women and to take their property. So they instituted witch persecutions. So there's a lot of ways that religion has been used to hide the activities of psychopaths, and it's not just in the beginnings of the religion, which, you know, Judaism was created as a control system. I mean, that's all it was.
Yeah. Right, and I agree with that as a, you know, an observation that it happens. One example, I guess, would be that I've studied would be the Morocco of Hassan II, the previous king, not today's king, who seems to be a little bit more human, but his father, Hassan II, seems to have been quite a psychopath. He brought in the CIA to build a gigantic torture center, enjoyed killing and torturing his opponents and so on and so forth, did all this by justifying his rule as a descendant of the Prophet Muhammad and somebody with mystical baraka. You know, he legitimized his rule through the religion. So I'm not saying it doesn't happen with Islam. It certainly does happen with all religions.
Yeah,
I see that the leaders today, you know, are like a lot like Emperor Constantine. They kind of remarried, you know, he's the first one that professed Christianity and made it a state religion. And I think a lot of our problems go back to this divine right of kings. They believe that they're doing God's will, and they put themselves into positions of power believing that they're backed by God. And
believing that they're backed by God means
they do anything.
They must have the approval of the priesthood. And what Constantine did was,
he gave the clergy the power.
He gave them the authority over the courts, you know, beyond which there was no appeal. So naturally, that was the way to create a psychopathic institution. And it certainly did, and it has been so ever since. And Western society is suffused with the ideas and the ideology. I mean, Christianity stands almost alone as being a religion that declares that its God is the only God, and and that there is no recourse beyond that God, and if you don't believe in that God, you're damned to hell for all eternity.
I would be condemned as a heretic because I don't accept Constantine's decisions or the Council of Nicaea. I think that the church we have today is the false teachers that Jesus warned about. If you ever read Isaac Newton's observations on Daniel and Revelation, and also the book by Alexander Hislop, The Two Babylons, I think that there is the false Christianity is the very church that runs around and preaching Jesus.
Certainly it is, but even more important than that is the fact that Burton Mack has pretty well demonstrated, to my mind at least, through his scholarly studies of the linguistics of the various layers of the New Testament, that whoever this Jesus legend was formed around probably wasn't Jewish, and he was more likely to be a cynic, a peripatetic, somebody who gets up in the marketplace and pokes fun at the authorities and encourages all the young people to overthrow the traditions and to get rid of the social restraints and to forget about class and class structures and social structures seeing how the layers got built up and how each layer was added by someone else, and the Book of Mark was, you know, undoubtedly written by a schizoidal psychopath, in my opinion.
I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I kind of go along those lines. I believe that, you know, that's what's been pushed upon us, and we've deluded ourselves. The Bible talks about errors of those, you know, people deluded by the error. And I kind of go along with this, that is exactly what's happened.
The bottom line is religion is used by psychopaths to control vast numbers of people in the name of politics.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's the last word, I guess, because we're coming to the end of today's Dynamic Duo Show. So I'd really like to thank Laura Knight-Yadchik for coming on. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, take care.
And don't forget my website, Sot.
Oh, yeah. Tell us the website.
Sot.net, S-O-T-T dot net, N-E-T.
SOTT.net. All right.
That's it.
Thanks. Okay, bye-bye. Okay, we'll be back here again on Monday, so stay tuned to GCNLive.com. This is Kevin Barrett signing off.